All right, we are here. And welcome, welcome to each one of you. Today we're going to talk about perhaps the most pivotal issues of your life. Yes, the most pivotal issue you already know. It has to do with the dance of love. We're not talking romantic love today. We're talking about the love that you experience in this lifetime as your template of love. Where do you learn about love? When you separate from the oneness, come into physical form, and you are born. In order to keep from feeling separate, in order to keep from feeling abandoned, it is as if you are given adult humans, one or more, to take care of you during your helpless years. And these beings, these big, tall humans, much bigger than you, who you perceive initially to be walking, talking gods, are the ones that show you the mysteries of love. In your birth family, your relationship with your parents sets the tone, the resonance for the rest of your life. Your parents give you your basic beginning beliefs, attitudes about things. They give you an idea of what love is. They define it in a sense for you. Even if they don't know how to love you, what they do, you interpret, well, this must be love. What else could it be? You've come from the oneness. You've come from the love. In your family, with your siblings, with grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins, you learn the experience of family and community. You learn how to link to others, to communicate, to connect. You learn the very all-important theme of being human, and that is your individuality. You learn through interaction, day after day, year after year. There's no school on the planet that gives you as thorough an education. Because when you are an infant, when you are a toddler, when you are a very, very young child, your education is 24/7. It happens through the night in your dreams. It happens during the day in your interactions. What you feel, what you think. You learn in your birth family what your theme of this lifetime is about. You learn what your life lessons are. Those that you give yourself. You learn your basic issue. Your basic crux, your basic limitations. Now, many people think, oh, if only we could get to a place to where we could have the perfect family, where the parents could be absolutely, totally capable of loving and really fully developed. Then the children would grow up to be these extraordinary, beautiful, magnificent beings. They wouldn't have any issues. But dear ones, your soul chose specific issues for you. Now, why did they do that? Why would you choose deliberately to go into something limiting and dark? And then have to learn how to work your way out of it? There are a couple of reasons. One is that you want to learn the experience of being human. You want to experience humanity in all its magnificence, its breadth, its width, its height. You want depth. And dear ones, if you didn't have an issue, would you grow? Would you really take the time to develop your own belief systems, your own thoughts and feelings, your own understandings, to develop your self-esteem and your self-worth, to learn how to love yourself, to learn how to love others? Would you make the effort if there was no challenge? So each one of you chose your family as a joint effort. You and your parents and everybody got together on the other side, kind of a panel, discuss this and that, look at this and look at that, and here's what we're going to do. And the parents say, here's what we're going to play on this, and this is part of the play. And you said, this is what I'm going to do, and out of this I will be able to learn. I will have depth. I will learn and grow and be intimate with myself. I will explore the experience of humanity, of being human. The second reason comes with those who are spiritually oriented. And by spiritually oriented, we mean those who are oriented towards opening up and deepening and enriching their connection with the divine. Those who wish to take into themselves the knowing of who they are truly, who are willing to grow, develop, expand themselves, to step into the light beings in the radiance of their power to love that earth that they have come to visit. Spiritually oriented people choose a theme, yes, for option number one, but they also add option number two. And that is that when you, as a spiritual person, learn how to heal your challenge, we call it the commission of challenge. It's you commission a particular challenge to trigger your growth process. All right? You use it in order to learn how to transcend it, not to dismiss it, not to look down on it, not to ignore it or just walk away from it. But you learn how to go through it and get to the other side. And when you do that, you're capable then of taking this transmuted, transformed, and transcended energy to help heal others, to shift and change the realities on your planet. Yes, there's a global orientation to that. There's a gift you're bringing to the rest of humanity. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that as you lift out of your commission of challenge, as you become realized in that particular area and heal it, that you're going to have to go out and, you know, write a book and do some workshops and travel around and tell everybody. That's the form that some people take. You may just be someone who holds a light for a friend so that they may change, so they can have hope, so they can lift themselves. It may be that you can then dream a dream for your country, for your world, and have it have impact and make a difference because you know what those vibrations are on the other side. You know how to connect with something greater. So these issues that you have to encounter, that you have to run up against like into a wall over and over again, given to you by your parents and family or guardians or perhaps sometimes occasionally grandparents or siblings, that these issues can develop you to become the person you chose to be. For an example, the one who channels us was born into a family in which the mother was very much a fundamentalist, religious, always, you know, throwing guilt about, and Jesus. And from a very early age, she realized that this was not her path. It was forced on her. It was pushed on her. It was pressured on her. If her mother had said, okay, whatever you want to be, yes, if you want to go out and dance with the nature spirits and do a little shamanic, ceremony out in the woods, that's fine. Would she have grown? She may never have looked for her own path. She may never have stretched. She may never have gone to investigate and search. Everything would have been too cozy, too easy. But with that pressure, relentless, and the guilt, and the issue with it, she said, I've got to find something that is more me. I've got to. For to survive this, it's too stressful. And so she found her path. Many people do that. Sometimes, for example, a woman will be born in a female body. You know, a soul has no gender. But once you come into physical plane manifestation, you do. Is born in a female body, perhaps, to learn how to be repressed. To submit. To stuff it inside. You see. So that she can learn how to open up and express and to be herself and to share that and be an inspiration to other women. Perhaps a man comes in to be, in a sense, pressured, pushed for performance by his father, to be made guilty by his mother. So that at some point he can address the tremendous pressure given men to be the performers, to be the providers, to be the macho masters of the universe. A role which no man can actually assume, honestly. What if he can break through that wall of fear, fear of being humiliated, fear of failure? What if he can learn how to accept himself whole? What an inspiration he can be to other men so that they can find their freedom. All of you who are listening to us have chosen this second piece. To some degree. It is in your family situation, in the environment, and specifically in the relationship between you and your parents, in which you learn what love is. You learn how it's defined. It can be twisted. It can be distorted. You learn that too. The reason it's important to look at it, at all of this, is because, number one, if you heal your commission of challenge, if you heal your issues that you adopt, that you accept, that you work with from your family, you can become free. You can step into your divinity. You can claim your power, and you can change your reality. Because, indeed, you do create it, every bit of it. Without exception. You have that power, that capacity. It's important, it's imperative to be able to heal the relationship with your family. Because then you can have beautiful relationships with other people. Rather than projecting on them aspects of your family. And then reacting to them as if they were members of your family and playing out the old dramas, emotionally speaking, over and over and over again. Instead of finding the same limitations over and over again, you're free. You can discover exquisite intimacy, exquisite joy, freedom. You can understand what it means to be truly one with another. These are grand experiences that when people do get that experience, they realize that they have experienced something beyond the ordinary. They've experienced a piece of God, a piece of Goddess, a piece of the divine. It touches you. It is what your life is really about. That's how important this is. Because unless you do that, your whole life, as many people's lives are, will be devoted to dancing around the same mommy-daddy issues till death. There are many people who never, ever get out of the matrix of beliefs and the matrix of feelings and the matrix of identity that are given them in their family. Three dimensions, creating a matrix. And when they never get out of it, they're never free. They're never free to discover truly who they are. In order to do this healing, you want to look at your parents or guardians. Now, you may have been raised by one or both parents. You may have had a time where you had to live with your grandparents or one grandparent, or perhaps you even, if you were adopted, you might have had a foster home. But nevertheless, those were people who were your mentors as parents, de facto parents. So when we refer to parents, it's anyone who raised you for any period of time in your childhood. Your parents, who were they? Were they happy people? Sad all the time or depressed? Serious about life? Angry? Were they conformists? Afraid to step outside the box? Or nonconformist rebels who are always doing stuff that once you hit adolescence embarrass the dickens out of you? What did they believe to be true? Did they believe that life was hard, the world was scary? Did they believe that everyone was a good person and lovable? Did they believe it was possible to be fully realized? Did they believe that you and they were both beautiful sparks of divine consciousness? Did they believe that they and you were the scum of the earth, that guilty, rejects of God? Were they atheists? What religion were they? Who were these people that raised you? And what did they think of you? What did they give you? Their beliefs, their attitudes, their thoughts, their feelings. Yes, you picked them up. Just sucked them up. You were a sponge. What else were you going to do? Those of you who are empathic know what being a sponge is like. If you're around somebody who's absolutely furious, how do you feel? You just want to go, ooh, you want to wrap some kind of metal plate around you and protect yourself. You want to shield yourself. What did you have to shield yourself from your parents about? What was the difficult part of the relationship with them? How did they make you feel about yourself? What kind of identity did they give you? to start out with? Were you smart? Did they tell you that you were talented and gifted? Did they basically say that in some no uncertain words, or in some kind of couched languaging, that you just weren't as good as somebody else and you had to try harder and life is going to be harder for you? Or you're the slow one? What did your parents say about you? What did you get that they believed about you? Even if they didn't say it, what was implied? And when your parents and you communicated, what did you have to do to feel safe? Did you have to keep your mouth shut? Did you have to try and please? What compensations did you have to make? What did they expect of you? What did they assume about you? Did they expect that you were going to make them proud and take care of them in their old age? Did they expect that you were going to be a sibling for one of your siblings? We say that because the channel's mother was an only child, and she said, oh, nothing's worse than being an only child. And so even though she was getting along in years, she decided to have the channel so that her older sister would have a sister and wouldn't be an only child. So sometimes parents have a purpose underlying having a child. Did your mother have you because she wanted a child for herself? It's like the other child was daddy's girl or daddy's boy. Did she want somebody to love her, to need her, to make her feel important? Same for father. Did he want to have you so that he could look good? To continue the family dynasty? Immortality? Someone to have a purpose for all that performing and providing? Someone to look up to him? To admire him? To value him? What did your parents want you for? Yes, they wanted to love. That is the beauty of humanity, that underneath everything, there is still a desire to love. If they hadn't had that intention, it would have been really hard to overcome all the obstacles that a person has to overcome in order to have a child, and to deal with the burden of a child growing in development and education and so forth for years and years and years. The parents were looking for love. They were looking to receive love. Maybe they were also looking to give some. What did you do with your parents in order to love them? To give them what they wanted, to give them that love and value and admiration and whatnot. Sometimes it meant that you had to play a role that they approved of, that they wanted you to play. You had to be someone that you maybe intrinsically were not. You had to postpone yourself until later. Or maybe you had to take care of them. Perhaps one of your parents was ill. Or maybe your parents had you because they weren't getting along so well. Well, you have a baby, it'll keep us together. Sometimes this is used in order for a woman, for example, that the channel knows, had a boyfriend and she was very attached to him and looked like he wasn't at all interested in marrying her. So she didn't tell him that she wasn't using birth control and got pregnant and manipulated him through guilt into marrying her. Of course it didn't work, you know, but the idea was this child was going to come and mend the relationship. Look at what burden was given to the child. Did you have any of these burdens given to you? Were you meant to straighten something out, to heal something, to make everything okay? Were you an accident, quote unquote, a surprise? Were you resented? Were you a burden? If so, how did you feel about that? What did you feel about yourself? Because you see, what happens is that no parent can love you perfectly. They cannot love you to the extent that God, Goddess, all that is, loves you. And you feel you're separated from God, Goddess, all that is, and placed with these parents who you're thinking are loving you, and you're hoping they're loving you, but it doesn't feel quite right. It doesn't feel complete. It doesn't feel fabulous. So where's the problem? You decide it's you. You're the problem. They must be doing it right. There's something wrong with you because you're the one who got abandoned. You're the one who separated from the oneness. You forget that you've forgotten. Easy to do when you've forgotten, right? Because when you enter in the physical plane, you forget who you are. Part of the separation process, part of the individuation of your soul. So you think it's your fault. You think anything that happens bad to your parents when you're a small child must be your fault. In fact, we were talking with one of our friends who explained that when her sister died, her younger sister died, and she was attending a parochial school, one of the nuns got her up in front of the class and said, "Shame on you. It's because you're a bad girl that your sister died." What a horrific thing to do to a child. It just emphasizes what all of you did. All of you took on your parents' stuff. Some of you actually took it on really literally, taking on their health problems. They say it's inheritance. No. You're taking it on. I love you and I want to show you that I am lovable and that I'm yours and please love me. I'll take your stuff. I'll make you happy. If I can make you happy, will you then love me? Will I be okay then? Will you stop judging me? Well, can we have some harmony in the house? Can it be happy around here and light rather than so heavy? Some of you were subjected to some very strong, deep guilt and shame. For most people, the average Joe and Jane never recover from the shame. The shame is the darkest place you go because it's in the shame where you feel that you're most separate from God, Goddess, all that is, that you are least divine of anybody. Everybody else is better than you. Something's wrong with you. You are flawed. You are a screw up and that's just the way it is. What a fantastic foundation for a very positive self-image, yes? Unfortunately, everyone has to learn how to build their self-image, a positive self-image, from scratch. They're certainly not given one. Yes, there may be positive things your parents have said about you. Yes, you're a very nice person. You're a caring person. You're a loving person. You're a talented, gifted person. But were they able to tell you this without an expectation coming along with it? That since you're a loving person, you will submit to me and my control. Oh, since you are a very gifted and talented person, you're going to have to really produce and achieve something great so that I can be proud, so that I can be happy. All of this is implied generally. Seldom does a parent sit down and say, now, I want you to take care of me. And the way I want you to do this is I want you to achieve, and be totally successful, and then I will feel in your light that I did a good job, and I will finally be redeemed. No, they don't do that. They're not aware of it. Why? Because they're still living within the matrix of their parents and their family. So your enlightenment process only happens when you get old enough to realize that these adults who are raising you are definitely not perfect. They don't have their act all together. They have issues, and they have vulnerabilities, and they have weaknesses. Some of you are expected to be strong for your parents. Others of you are expected to be weak and dependent, so that hopefully you'll never leave home. You know, what about the parents who say, you know, when their child goes off to college, don't worry, we'll keep your room for you anytime. And after college, they get married, they go off. Don't worry, we'll keep your room just right for you anytime you want to come back. What message is that for a child? We don't trust that you're ever going to be standing on your own feet. And we like you being dependent on us. We like the power rush that is. We think we want someone in-house to love us and pay attention to us. You know it's not right, in a sense, emotionally inside yourself. But when you're a child, can you express what that is? No. You're not educated about your emotions. Did your parents ever sit down and tell you constructive ways to deal with your anger? No. You just don't be angry. That's the bottom line. And if you stay angry, I'm going to punish you more. Were you listened to? Were you heard? Did you feel understood? Supported? Now, admittedly, you came to parents who had some gifts for you. Not just negative ones. Yeah, we're talking about the limitations. There's some really good positive ones, too. First of all, there are some good thoughts and feelings and beliefs that you picked up. And your parents had some information to teach you. They could train you in what they did well, perhaps. You could pick up their talent, their capacities. They could nurture you in particular ways to open up more of your creativity, let's say. Give you opportunities to expand yourself, to become more than you have been. So, yeah, there's positive things. We're not denying that is there. And we're not denying that there's love there, that they love you and you love them. But some of these love bonds are not positive. Some of these love bonds are negative. You're connected by guilt. When the channel was in her first marriage, her husband and she didn't have a telephone, so every now and then they would go to a payphone and they would call their parents. And at one point she noticed that every time her husband called his parents and talked to his parents, that his body language, his posture while he was on the phone talking to his parents, became like a little kid's. She said, that's very interesting. And he would look all nervous and you know, hesitant, and he would be like a kid again, instead of, you know, a man. It's like here he was in his, you know, late 20s, and he was He was still like acting like he was maybe 9 with them. So she thought, well, okay, let me watch what happens when I talk to my parents. She was horrified, of course, to find the same thing going on. Stepping into the child position. When you relate to your parents, if they're still alive, do you go back into your child mode? Now, we want to point out something, is that part of the natural evolution of your life is that at some point you need to polarize yourself from your parents. It's necessary for individuation. It's called rebellion, resistance. You polarize. If they like this, you like that. If they do this, you do that. You polarize. It's your first step into a freedom of seeing yourself as the individual that you are. Now, a lot of times this creates tremendous dissension and resistance and fighting and rebellion, normally known as adolescence. Because it's in adolescence that you can see your parents' weaknesses and you start judging them. You judge them according to the standards of your peer group. And of course they're going to show up as fuddy-duddies. They're going to show up somehow not so totally cool. And if they do, in a sense, it still is an embarrassment for you because they dominate everybody's attention. And so nobody's paying attention to you. You've got to resist. You've got to push them away. You've got to pull yourself to another polarity. It's a growth step. It's painful for both you and your parents, generally. It's a fighting position. But you may find that if you have access to grandparents, you can get along much better with your grandparents. In fact, your grandparents can show you how to adapt to your parents, because guess what? Your parents had to polarize from them. So you and your grandparents can sometimes end up on the same side of the polarity. You can get techniques from them. You can feel comfortable and aligned with them. You could be more comfortable expressing yourself with them sometimes. And sometimes you can also see between your parents. So sometimes you identify with one or you are more like the other. Oh, you're just like your father or you're just like your mother. If you see that parent that you're just like, quote unquote, interfacing and interacting with the other parent or another family member, you're going to very likely pick up the strategy that that other family member has in dealing with this parent. How do I deal with this mother who is just so, like, on my case and just so into my face and we're so, how do I separate my identity? Oh, well, look. Here's what the grandparent does. Here's what the father does. And her father kind of like, okay, just kind of ignores her and reads the paper. Maybe you'll do the same kind of thing. So you pick up these strategies, which you actually use later in your relationships with your mate and with your children. We'll get to that in a moment. Okay, now, we talked about what your parents perhaps expected, demanded, desired, fantasized about you. What did you desire, imagine, and fantasize about them? Did you want them to be a certain way? Did you hope that somehow if you did it good enough or if you communicated most clearly and if you were very, very loving and considerate and all these kinds of things, that they would become the parent that you would like to have and then you'd have the relationship you'd really like to have with them? Where did you feel that you needed to change yourself, or where did they need to change in order for the two of you, or the three of you, to have that perfect relationship? So often, children feel when they see other children that look happier, not necessarily true, but they see that and they think, oh, they are having more fun in that house. They have more money. They have more, they go more places. They have more fun. There's more siblings to play with. Oh, that must be so much more fun over there than in my house where it's serious and there's not as many kids or vice versa. Whatever the child has is not quite enough. That's why the child is always needing. Needy, needy, needy. I want more. I need more. I need more. I need more. I need more. Have you ever known a child that didn't come to greet the parent and say, what'd you bring me? You go out on a, go on a trip and you come back and what does your child say? Did you bring me something? Did you bring something back for me? Children need to be given stuff. Makes them feel loved. Gives them attention. If you had that, how do you deal with that as an adult? Do you go shopping? give me. Oh, look, more of this, more of that, more of the other. Kind of an expensive need, but nevertheless, there are people who do it. So what did you want? What was your fantasy of what the beautiful relationship could be? When you grew up, what did you think you could be with your parents? What relationship could you have? Did you dream about? Did you want? Did you give up on that? Did you get it? Did you make the breakthrough? Did you have an uneasy alliance? Is it a lot of work? Do you still keep your mouth shut? Do you still keep yourself removed? Do you not talk to your parents if they're alive? And if your parents died, how did you feel after they died? Did you feel free? Did you feel that you were truly done with them? Or did the same patterns continue? See, death doesn't change anything, really. It's just a transmutation of form. The emotions could stay the same. So look at that. What you wanted from your parents, what you desired, what your fantasy, what your dream was. And maybe with grandparents as well. And know that the child part of you, or the teenage part of you, unless you've satisfied that, still holds those dreams and still influences you today with the hope that somehow or another you'll get to that beautiful place to where your relationship with your parents will be beautiful and then you will feel okay and you will feel wonderful and happy and loved finally. Understood, loved, valued, cherished. Won't that feel good? But in your way, as your personal growth, you have to take it from there. When you grow up, that evolution that takes you to your adulthood does not continue. You have to consciously and deliberately continue growing. Once you reach full physical size, you have to emotionally continue to grow by choice. You have to take your power, your will, your love, your beauty. You have to work with yourself. Now, of course, you had siblings. Where were you in birth order if you had siblings? Were you first, second, third, later? The firstborn generally feels the most privileged. Generally is the more assertive, perhaps, because it's on the firstborn shoulders that the family's reputation, the family's, it's like the carry the flag into battle, you know? You're the flag bearer. You're the one that's taking the family forward into the next generations. You're looked as to be the one to inherit. In many cultures, the firstborn inherits everything. In in nature. You can see that the firstborn of birds is generally sometimes twice as large as a second or third born. The second and third are just backups in case the first one doesn't make it. Harsh, in a way. Nature's way of making sure that the species survives. So if you were like second or third, how are you going to establish your own identity? You have to rebel, in a sense, not just against your parents, but against your older siblings. Generally, not in every case, but generally the most rebellious member of the family is the last born. By the time they get down to the last born, whether it's a second, third, fourth, or whatever, by the time the last born comes along, there's a lot more leniency. The parents already have learned the hard way how to raise a child and kind of all the original fears and terrors and not knowing what to do at certain times and so on. It's all been resolved. They're very educated about it. They're much more laid back and much more relaxed about being parents. They got their routine down, you know. So the last born, less expected of them. The lastborns can go off and explore something else. Now, needless to say, though, the lastborns have, or the secondborns or laterborns, anyone after the firstborn sibling, will tend to have more difficulties with their self-image. Because the firstborn is the one that does so much work of performance and image and drive and achievement and so on, because that's where the focus of the family goes. In fact, the firstborn, you know, when the secondborn shows up, maybe the firstborn is age 2 or 3 or something like that, it's a shock to the firstborn. Here the firstborn has been the entire focus. And then the secondborn comes in and steals the show. Because babies are more dependent and therefore, you know, get much more attention. Sometimes the oldest or the older child, when the next child comes along, will start having, regressing, you know, and goes back into diapers or something. It's amazing. The competition begins right away. Who's going to get the most attention? Because it is understood that whoever gets the most attention, that one will have the best chance of happiness. That one will get more love. And the more love you get, the more health and happiness and joy and success as a child, you know, not even thinking about adult success yet, you can have. It's necessary for survival to feel loved. Now, some people say, well, I wasn't loved. Yeah, you were loved enough. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. You did survive. You made it. Yay to you. But siblings will always vie. It's in with your siblings that you learn politics, right? You learn how to get cozy in with this one and make sides with against another one and to play favorites and to undermine them and play tricks on them and kind of get them in trouble so that you look like the good one. You know, it's with siblings that you learn how to control, manipulate, whether from strength and domination or from weakness and guilt. You learn the tricks when you have siblings. If you're an only child, you do carry the full weight of parents' expectations. An only child does have an extra road to travel because they're fulfilling all the children in one. Many times, an only child will feel that they are responsible for everything of their family, of their parents. And there was, they have to have children, they have to do this, they have to whatever. You know, it's like the list, you have to buy this kind of car, live in this particular neighborhood, do this kind of job, and blah, 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 blah. It is a bit harder. But they are generally very self-reliant. They're very strong only children. They have to be. Sometimes the firstborn is expected to take care of the laterborns. So they go into servitude for the family. Something that's sometimes not expected of the laterborns. So you have this dynamic of play. Where were you in your family? What was the dynamic between you and your siblings if you had them? Or if you were an only child, what was the level of expectation that you felt that was sitting on you by two adults on you alone? And where was your freedom? How did you get it? How did you have that opening? How did you create the opportunity to have a good life for yourself? And if you had sibs, how did you learn to deal with the competition? How did you learn to compete or not to compete? How did you learn the dance? Do you use that in your life today? Do you know how to do it? How to work the politics? And what about you and your siblings? Are you on good terms? Do you not speak with each other? You see, siblings can be so very different. Amazing, they come from the same two sets of genes, but they are so vastly different that sometimes they have no overlap of things in common because we're so busy separating from parents and from each other. Their lives are so different, such a different quality to them. But nevertheless, regardless of that, sometimes the pain and the hurt and the sneakiness and mischievousness of childhood between siblings has created situations of pain, memories that are painful, preferences not to speak to that sibling. And that may have something to do with the identity you pick up in your family, because it's with siblings that you figure out your place in the family. You know, which sibling is the smart one? Which one is the talented one? Which one is the slow one, the fast one, the, you know, the fat one, skinny one? The one who's going to be popular and successful. Or the one who's always going to be the dreamer and drifter. Which one were you? We're not saying it's included within this short list. But you know what we're talking about. Every family has one. Maybe this one was the musician. This one was the entertainer. This one was a scientist. How did you separate it out? It's going to be more than just nerd or popular kid. But you got your identity defined there. Yes, your parents gave you an identity relative to them. But when you go into adolescence, you and your siblings and your peer group serve to give you, by reflection, the input that you get from them, the judgments that you get from them, or the approval that you get from them, and the validation, reinforces a certain identity, a certain self-image, a certain gift or capacity of yours. And of course, unfortunately, it kind of sticks, because even when you're in your 40s, 50s, and beyond, you can still be known as the musician, even if you haven't touch the instrument in 20 years. There is a place where all of these identity pieces, all of this stuff can just lock in. It locks in somewhere in your 20s. If you choose to continue growing on a spiritual emotional basis, you will unlock this and you will expand who you are and go to a greater identity where you're no longer just the child of these parents. You become their equal, and you're no longer identified by your sibling rivalry position, but by your own definition, in your own power, in your own light, in your own energy. If you don't have any communication with a sibling, or if a sibling has died, what do you feel? Is there a hole in there somewhere? A lack of something to bounce your ideas and your identity against? A lack of reflection to you? What about your parents? They always show you where, how far you've grown, yes? Every time you relate to your parents, if it's easier and easier and you're stronger and stronger and they're more respectful and they hear you better and you're more whatever, you're going to say, wow, I've grown. You use your parents as your feedback, as your point of reference. There comes a point, dear ones, where you make the leap into your spiritual identity. And at that point, you become your point of reference. You no longer really use your family for that. But until you get to that point, it's always useful to see, oh, how far I've grown. How much less what my mother or my father said this time, in that way that they normally say it, that, you know, that bothered me. It's so much less. I feel so much easier about it. I can laugh about it already. It's just been 2 days. I can laugh. And before, I would like fret over this for a week. My gosh, I'm making progress. Same with your siblings, who very often, your parents and your siblings, get a stalled or an arrested picture of you and expect you to be the same person that you've always been. What happens when you change? Do they resent you, resist you, fight you, judge you, criticize you, act puzzled, run away, detach, dismiss? How do they respond to you as you grow and become more? So some of you, in order to make your parents happy, realize that they felt, in a sense, in competition with you, and you diminished your light for them. Look, I'll be less so you can be more. Some point in your life, you've got to be more. Doesn't make them less. You're going to have to be more. And what mission do you have with your family? Is it part of your challenge, your commission of challenge, is to heal your family? You don't have to be a marriage and family counselor, you know, as an expression of that healed relationship, or to focus on it, or really to be able to work with it. We know of one woman who never got over the issues with her mother. Turned out that there was a prior sibling who died before she was born, a couple of years. And her mother's grief had not been resolved. And she was born into her mother's grief. She never felt loved. She never felt it. She never allowed that. She separated. She tried to achieve to make her mother proud. It never worked. In despair, she had to give up. Living a lonely life which is, of course, what most people are afraid of, is loneliness, the isolation. Most people will do almost anything to keep from being isolated and alone. First of all, it's humiliating. Look, I'm the lonely person. Nobody loves me. But secondly, where are you getting your love? The fear is you can't give it to yourself. When you heal the relationships with your family, it's going to be obvious that you are the one empowered to give love to yourself. And then you don't have to look at your mate to provide for you. One of the things that turns most people off in dating is when one of the partners is needy. Yes? Uh-oh. Child alert. And some of you grew up thinking, well, okay, we've got to play the parent-child dynamics in the relationship. Women who think they have to be mother and take care of the little boys that are their husbands. And that will never grow up. That seem to never grow up. And always be like, you know, running off and doing whatever they want to do. And so the strategy is, okay, I'm going to be mother. I'm going to make them need me. And then I won't lose them. Or the man that feels he has to perform and parade about and show himself off so that she'll be impressed. The one who promises the world to his little lady so that she will come along. But those promises don't tend to get fulfilled very easily. Because the promises are beyond his capacity. He uses the promises as the lure. Now, how does he keep her? Oh, let's do some codependency. Let's love and then pull away. And then she'll feel, oh, what did I do? What did I do? Here, I'll make it up to you. I'll make it up to you. Ah, okay. Okay, if you're especially nice to me, then I'll talk to you again. Now, we're not saying that these are distinctly female and male patterns. We're just giving that as an example, although those do show up. But it can play either way. And those are parent-child dynamics. That's what you learned as a child, is how to be codependent. You learned how to be dependent. And then you learned that, as in codependency, that certain things you can't talk about because you'll create too much disturbance. You'll create too much stress. Too much anger, which you're not able to express or allowed to express. So it's too dangerous to go there. So keep your mouth shut. Okay, we won't talk about that subject. Or that maybe you've got to change them so that you can have a good relationship. How many of you have tried to fix somebody? Not necessarily parents. Maybe you tried to do that or a sibling, but your mate. To fix your mate so that, okay, we'll get a fixer-upper. We'll get somebody who really needs some help here, and we'll fix them up. We'll teach them things. We'll give them good books and DVDs and everything, and make sure that they have every resource they need to become the person in potential I see them that they could possibly be. And, of course, this screws up the relationship big time. Because you're being parent and putting them in child. Anytime you act like a parent, they're going to be the child and they're not going to like it. Or they're going to use it. Or they're going to be child deliberately to force you into parent. Or they're going to be parent to force you into child. Arguments are won and lost this way. But they're very unfulfilling wins because as soon as both people are past that and they get back into their grown-up energy, it's like, well, that sucks. But they don't know how to get out of it. When you heal the relationship with your family, you don't fall prey to those patterns which are so ingrained in your culture, in your whole reality, the matrix of your whole consensus, the collective, unconscious. is pushing you all the time to be codependent. Pushing you all the time to do a big dance for love and validation. Pushing you all the time to be more, to redeem yourself from the guilt and the shame that you invariably must feel because, you know, you have been abandoned by God here. It's not spoken like that, but the energy feels like that. Have you not all felt that at one point or another? All right, so how do you do this healing thing with your parents, with your siblings, family members? You're going to have to let them be the people that they are. You're going to forgive them. You're going to let them go. You're going to release them from all your expectations, your fantasies, your demands. And guess what? You're going to have to do this for your children too. Because whatever games you learn to play at your mommy and daddy's knee probably got switched around and dumped on your children. Now, if you have grown children, it's time for you to let them go free, if you haven't already done so. To cut the cord, let the little birds fly from the nest, etc. If you have younger children, start paying attention to how, regardless of what you felt about the way your parents raised you, how they influence what you're doing now as a parent. You know, sometimes with great shock, a channel would realize, my gosh, that sounded just like my mother. Recognize the shame gets passed down. It's not spoken. It's in the energy. If you are still stuck with your parents, your children are going to pick it up. Because they're psychic sponges like you were when you were a kid. They're picking everything up. They're picking up all your guilt, your shame, your rage, your pain, your sorrows, as well as your joys and happiness and gifts and celebrations. You need to forgive yourself as a parent. Because frankly, you know, when you have kids, have you ever noticed? It's not the mature people who have kids. If so, you'd wait until your 40s and your 50s when you're really, you know, got a really good, you know, your handle on life, or your idea about what really works in life, and then you have your kids. Hey, it'd be a different story. But your grandparents generally by then, 50s, whatever. You tend to have your kids when, especially if you're in your late teens or in your 20s, you're not mature yet. In your culture, you don't really mature until what the astrologers call the Saturn return or the progressed moon cycle return. This happens after the age of 28. Somewhere between 28 and 30, you shift and you establish yourself in an adult identity. If you have children before that time, what are they picking up? They're picking up all the unresolved stuff from you and your family. Don't feel bad about it. It's just what happens. Your parents were not fully mature and had not really retrained themselves and not developed themselves on a spiritual, emotional, mental, and physical level to which you aspire before they had you. So your early years are with your parents at their most immature. Have your parents changed? Some of them do. Some might continue to grow. It's amazing. And some of them don't. Some of them want to stay right there, where they were when you were 22. Don't do this to your children, if you have children. Let them be who they are, just as you let your parents be the people that they are. Love them for the people that they are. Accept them completely, 100%, unconditionally, as the people that they are. Don't expect them to change. Don't try to change them. Don't try to make them understand you. They're not going to. You're still their little girl or boy. They haven't been with you in your thought and growth process. They don't know what they're missing. And they don't want to know, generally, most of the time. What they would like to hear from you is this. Mom, Dad, you're great parents. You really did your best. I really appreciate you. And you know, you were right. Yeah, that's what they'd like to hear. Think about it. If you have adult children, wouldn't that be music to your ears too? But you see, it just doesn't tend to happen. Until, though, you are willing to go to your parents and say this authentically, knowing that this is what they need to hear and this is a way you can love them. You're not in your power. If you want to get in your power, if you want to stand in the fullness of who you are, you'll have to forgive yourself for taking on all this stuff, expecting whatever you've been expecting of them or hoping for whatever you've hoped. See, some people, their parents don't love them good enough. They apply that to a mate and the mate dies, they're going to get cancer and die. Some people do that. They cannot handle the resolution of that issue. Can you receive love from other people, or are you suspicious? How much love can you receive? How much love can you give unconditionally? It's in the family that the dramas of your life unfold. Later, we're going to take you through the process of healing and clearing, and then a meditation to do that, so that you can be done with it. You can really be finished. You can let it be over. And then you can be free in your power to love these people, whether they're alive or dead, to be free to be yourself and to love yourself. Even if your parents, you're not speaking to your parents, or your grown children are not speaking to you, won't even let you see the grandchildren. You can clear. You can heal this. It can change things. But first we'll have a question and answer, so think about what you would like to speak about. And we're going to leave for a short while so you to think about your relationship with your parents, your siblings, your children. What would you like to heal? How would you like for it to be? How would you like to feel when it's done? All right, so we're going to close now for a while, for 10 minutes? 10 minutes. And then we'll be back with you for questions. All right. Farewell.